I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, Democrats will happily throw businesses under the bus to make a political point. Plus,
you guys are with me, right?
Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell's most cringeworthy moment since taking office. And Amazon denies reports amid criticism from the White House that it planned to list the cost of tariffs for consumers. We'll discuss the back and forth and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Again, that's undividedpod.com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A special thank you to Undivided's paid subscribers who help support this show. We do appreciate you. Now look, as you know, I'm perfect. Humble, perfect, all of those things. But occasionally I get something wrong, so I like to stack those corrections at the top of the show. One thing I want to correct from our coverage of the budget that was passed in Olympia by Democrats and the new taxes, I got one thing wrong. So they did not end up passing a wealth tax. So you remember there's been a lot of back and forth about this. They didn't pass. They were going to pass a narrow version of the wealth tax to see if it would hold up in court. I thought that they had. They did not. Democrats in the Senate passed it. Democrats in the House opted not to take it up. So a little correction for you there. That's a good thing. But I would not be shocked if they ended up revisiting it next year. Senator Jamie Peterson, who's the Senate Democratic leader, was very unhappy that his fellow Democrats on the House side didn't want to go through with it.
This was a significant step forward and an opportunity for us to have sort of present a vision of what a world could look like in terms of better funded public schools and perhaps less regressive taxation if we were able to call on some of our most fortunate community members to contribute a higher share of their property to the general welfare.
Socialism, right? And they already are, by the way, because we already passed a capital gains tax, which you've just increased for the most wealthy. And so the idea that you already aren't targeting rich people for taxation is ludicrous. You just want to do it more because you cannot stop spending money. So just a correction there. All right. Democrats are very conveniently ignoring some of the challenges of businesses that relate to their own conduct. So what we're seeing at the national level right now, and it's happening at the local level as well. In fact, just last week, we had a story on the show about Seattle Pride Parade. And it was in the Seattle Times, and they were talking about, oh my God, we've lost all these corporate sponsors. We're down $300,000, and they blamed Donald Trump. In part because Donald Trump's anti-DEI bend, and because they say, and the Seattle Times says, with no proof whatsoever, that fewer corporate sponsors were giving money to Seattle Pride because they're fearful of the impact of Trump's tariffs. And I mentioned at the time that Seattle Times completely left out the fact that the day they published that article, Democrats were pushing through billions of new dollars in new taxes on businesses in the state of Washington. So the fear of what could happen under Trump's tariffs that hasn't manifested yet, that's what's stopping corporations from donating to Seattle Pride. But the very real taxes passed by Democrats in Olympia, that's not a contributing factor at all. And we're seeing that as well from U.S. Senator Patty Murray of our state, who's putting out these dumb little social media videos. I don't know who on the Democratic team is like telling these members of Congress that they need to do fun little videos with that tiny little microphone and act hip, but it's just weird. And anyway, Senator Patty Murray is traveling across the state talking about the disastrous impact of Trump's policies on businesses.
Hi, I'm here in Tacoma today.
I'm in Vancouver, Washington today.
I'm here in Blaine, Washington today.
I am just outside of Yakima.
I'm here in Seattle today.
At Brown and Haley. At an apple orchard today, talking to some of our farmers.
Having a chance to talk to everybody from our manufacturers to small businesses to people at the port that are being impacted by these tariffs.
This is a candy manufacturing company that has been here for decades. They are being impacted by the tariffs.
About the important relationship that we have with Canada and how it is being impacted so horrendously by the trade wars and the rhetoric from this administration.
It is very clear that the uncertainty, the chaos,
is creating havoc for our consumers who are paying more, for our small businesses, for people who work at the port.
I am calling on all of my Republican colleagues to work with us as Democrats to pass legislation to take back control of this before we lose these great businesses across our state.
First, can we just talk about the production value? She's a United States senator. You can't get her a microphone that works. That was hard to listen to and even harder to watch. So look, I'm fine. I do think that we can have a legitimate conversation about tariffs, the impact on businesses, the impact on consumers. I've said I thought the Trump administration should have been more forthcoming with the American people about the reality that tariffs are taxes and it will lead to increased costs and just justify the policy. So I'm not saying that Senator Patty Murray can't go around the state talking to businesses that are impacted by the tariffs. However, has she said anything at all about the $9.5 billion in new taxes her own party has pushed through right here in her state that she represents? Billions of those targeting businesses. Has she said anything at all about the billions of additional dollars in taxes for an increased business and occupation tax, which will impact small businesses and large corporations alike? No, of course she doesn't. Of course she hasn't. Because it's all political. What can I make a political point about? It's not about the outcome. If the outcome of tariffs is it hurts businesses, and the outcome of the B&O tax is it hurts businesses, and the outcome of both is that it hurts consumers, why not talk about both of them? Well, because you're ideologically captured, and I think people are guilty of this on both sides, and you only want to talk about the thing wrong that the other party did. So it's just this very convenient that Democrats here are losing their minds and the media is losing their minds, like the example I gave you of the Seattle Times, about tariffs and its chilling effect on corporations and completely ignoring the largest tax increase in state's history and the fact that it's coming on the backs of our businesses, big and small. So Senator Patty Murray is ignoring it. A lot of people in the media are ignoring it in favor of focusing on tariffs. Meanwhile, there was a joint statement put out by Washington Roundtable, which encompasses like the business community in Bellevue and Seattle and the chambers of commerce, et cetera. And they are frustrated with all of this, as they should be. They put out a statement saying, "We're deeply disappointed by the legislature's decision to approve nearly $9.4 billion in state and $3 billion local taxes for a total of over $12 billion in tax increases, an unprecedented move that comes at the worst possible time for working families and local employers." And then they quoted the Joe Fain, who's the president and CEO of the Bellevue Chamber of Commerce. He said, "The legislators are voting on these tax increases and can't even tell us how big they are." He said, "Best estimates point to nearly $2,000 per year for a family of four. Every aspect of life in Washington is about to get more expensive. While some in the legislature might claim they are helping working families, they are actually doing irreparable harm." And I certainly agree with that. But look, I don't take anyone seriously who says they care about the economy, they care about businesses, but then they pick and choose what to go after and what to focus on based on the political party that's perpetrating it. And, you know, with me on the tariff thing, I've hopefully have made clear that I do think tariffs can have a negative impact on our economy and on businesses and on consumers. But at the same time, I think it's another thing to acknowledge that, but also support the tariffs for the long-term goal of the tariffs. And that's why the Trump administration should be more honest about, here's the short-term pain, but here's our long-term goal, and we think the short-term pain is justifiable. Similar to Governor Jay Inslee, it's one of the things I've been saying about his Climate Commitment Act since the beginning. If he thought the Climate Commitment Act was justifiable and the goal of it to save our environment was justifiable to increase the cost at the pump for consumers, then just say that. I'll still disagree with it, but I at least think you're more honest. If he'd come out and said, "Look, yeah, gas prices are going to go up, but we think it's worth it because we're saving the planet." Instead, he just lied and said, "No, gas prices aren't going up because of the Climate Commitment Act," when they very obviously are. So it's all about picking and choosing, and it's getting utterly exhausting, frankly. All right, so on the budget front, and we will obviously get to some non-Olympia legislative news today, but on the budget front, so on the business tax front, I cannot get over how sanctimonious some of these Democratic lawmakers are about the impact of these taxes. We played so many cuts this session where they're like, "Oh, you should find joy in paying taxes and in funding schools. or with the Tesla tax. You know, Tesla shouldn't have a problem with giving us a little bit of its profits for the public good. They really just don't see an issue. And they're not even like thankful. Hey, I know it's tough. Give me a little acknowledgement. You know, we know it's tough on businesses. We know everybody's stretched thin right now. We're in a predicament. We wish we could find anything. Act like you care a little bit about the impact of your tax increases. So here's State Representative April Berg. She's the one who said, by the way, in a previous press conference that people get joy out of paying taxes. So she responded to, I thought, a very good question about the concerns that businesses have about these increased B&O taxes and the other struggles that they're facing.
You have companies that are looking, you know, have just survived COVID, barely, are looking at more headwinds from protectionist trade policies nationally, and now have a higher state tax burden, and what your message is to them and how to think about their role in balancing the state finances.
Yeah, I can start. So thank you for that question. And I think what Washington businesses are going to see is that this is still the best place in the United States to do business.
Is it?
We've got some of the best education. We've got transportation. And we've got a beautiful environment. And the investments that we ask business to make via our B&O system keeps it that way.
What world do they live in? What planet are you living in? First of all, there's literally no data to suggest that Washington State is one of the best of, if not the best state in the nation to run a business. In fact, all of the information and all the national rankings prove otherwise. We're like near the bottom of the list when it comes to business growth here. There's a reason for that. Businesses aren't just going to flee a state that's the best state in the nation to run a business. That wouldn't happen, right? So we know that's just a lie. And to suggest that businesses should be happy paying an increased B&O tax because we have some of the best, we have the best schools. No, we don't. Like, not even close. Our schools are failing academically across the board. Enrollment is going down because parents are starting to pull their kids from your failing education system. And attendance is in the toilet. So I don't know what sort of manufactured world that you have going on up in here, but it's absolutely not reality. And again, it's that very sanctimonious, like, it's a privilege. It's a privilege to live here and do business here and pay taxes here. It's insane, but very on brand for the state Democrats. So for his part, Governor Bob Ferguson had a little media scrum yesterday talking to reporters because he's going to take 2 weeks to look at the budget and then come out and say whether he's going to sign it, whether he's going to veto some things. So we're just waiting to see what he's going to do. He told King 5, though, he is trying to keep in mind how all these taxes affect families.
It's detailed. It's my first budget. And look, my obligation as governor is, of course, to go through that budget line by line with the team. It's a lot of work, but we'll be taking a thoughtful approach to it and obviously having a public conversation once we reach the conclusion of those budgets.
Yeah, I'll be the judge of whether you're taking a thoughtful approach to it or not. Yes, I am the only judge of that. And then here he is on Como News, same media scrum, talking about, and specifically Como did a story on the 6-cent increase in a gallon of gasoline, the increase in the gas tax that was passed. And, you know, the gas tax, so it's part of the transportation budget. There's not a lot of funding options for transportation. So that's actually something that had a little bit of bipartisan support. But as they point out, gas is already incredibly expensive here. And so Como was doing this story talking about that and whether he might consider vetoing the tax increase.
What do you say to working families who are looking at it saying, if you sign this, I won't be able to afford it?
Yeah, I think what I'm going to try and do is avoid signing a budget that leads to that outcome.
Huh. Okay, if you're going to avoid signing a budget that leads to that outcome, then you'd have to veto the gas tax. And then that would throw the whole transportation tax into question, or transportation package into question. But you're going to try to avoid signing a budget that leads to that outcome. The only way to avoid signing a budget that leads to that outcome is to veto $9.5 billion in new taxes, which you're not going to do. So, I mean, he's, again, saying the right things, being a little vague, saying the right things. Is he going to do the right thing? Very doubtful. Although, if you look at him and his as a political strategist, if there were one tax that you'd get a bunch of credit for and that would really help you politically if you vetoed it, probably would be the gas tax. Because that touches everyone, right? That's very obvious to see. I mean, you can see how much you're paying in taxes per gallon. And so if he were to try to veto something that would maybe let him off the hook for all the other tax increases and get some bonus points, I guess it would be the gas tax, but we will see what happens. All right. There was a crazy controversy unfolding this morning involving Amazon, based here in Washington State, and the White House and tariffs. And as like, it was like an hour between when the story broke, the White House lost its mind over it, and Amazon said, like, the whole story is made up, basically. So I still want to go through it so you know where things sit right now, because you're going to see a lot of headlines on this today. So Punchbowl News came out, and I'm actually surprised that they ended up allegedly getting this wrong, because Punchbowl News is usually pretty solid. Punchbowl News came out with a headline, Amazon to display tariff costs for consumers. So in this article, they suggest that Amazon was going to be putting, you know, the price of a tariff. So you buy something on the website. What did I buy yesterday? I bought some coffee pods. Beep, 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 beep. And then it would have a little addition on there that said, here's how much of that cost is related to Trump's tariffs. So that story came out, and White House Press Secretary Karoline Leavitt lost it on Amazon.
Reported this morning that Amazon will soon display a little number next to the price of each product that shows how much the Trump tariffs are adding to the cost of each product. So isn't that a perfect crystal clear demonstration that it's the American consumer and not China who is going to have to pay for these policies?
I will take this, since I just got off the phone with the president about Amazon's announcement. This is a hostile and political act by Amazon. Why didn't Amazon do this when the Biden administration hiked inflation to the highest level in 40 years? And I would also add that it's not a surprise, because as Reuters recently wrote, Amazon has partnered with a Chinese propaganda arm. So this is another reason why Americans should buy American. It's another reason why we are onshoring critical supply chains here at home to shore up our own critical supply chain and boost our own manufacturing.
Okay, so this becomes a question of who do you believe? Because Amazon says none of this is true. So you heard Karoline Leavitt there be like, I just got off the phone with the president about this, had this printed off thing ready, like this little hit thing for Amazon, you know, accusing them of ties to China and all of this and calling it political and horrible. So Amazon comes out with a statement and says, the team that runs our ultra low-cost Amazon Haul store considered the idea of listing import charges on certain products. This was never approved and is not going to happen. So how did it get from something that was maybe an idea or a concept for one branch of Amazon, but was never approved and is not going to happen, into the White House press secretary blasting Amazon very publicly and into Punchbowl News creating a whole news story out of it? So look, again, I don't know if there maybe Punchbowl got a hold of just the tiniest little thing and then turned it into something big, but did no one reach out to Amazon as part of all of this? Wouldn't that be your first? Nicole, what was the first thing I did when I saw that story today?
Oh, said let's reach out to
Amazon. I was like, hey, can you ask Amazon about this? So did no one do that? Did like Punchbowl News not do that? Did Karoline Leavitt or the president? You don't think the president could pick up the phone and call Andy Jassy or even Jeff Bezos and be like, hey, is this true?
Jeff was just at Mar-a-Lago not too long ago. So to me, it's all planned. They all work together on this.
Yeah, I mean, I already saw Republicans being like, we're going to boycott Amazon and all of this over it. And then Amazon's like, this isn't even true. I'll be honest, I tend to believe Amazon. I tend to believe Amazon. Now, apparently it was being considered in the ultra low cost Amazon Haul store, but was never run up the chain as something that was going to be applied to all the items that you would purchase on Amazon. So I'll leave it to you to decide who you believe or what might have happened behind the scenes. But Amazon said this isn't going to happen. Now, in our subscriber poll today, which we'll get to a little later, so if you haven't taken it on Patreon, Locals, or X, take it. This story aside, should they? This story aside, should they? Should businesses that have to increase costs over whatever it is, maybe it's increased taxes, maybe it's an increased minimum wage or an increased fee, Lord knows we have plenty of those, should you list it for consumers to see why the cost of things is so high? I think Uber did that at one point with the added mandates and regulations that had been put on them by the city of Seattle, you know, would say, here's what this fee is about. And I think that's appropriate. Like if it's an Airbnb and you've got a state that passes additional Airbnb fees and people want to know why they book a room that's $200 a night and they go check out and it's $9,000. I honestly don't think it's a bad idea. I kind of like it. And You have to be consistent with it, though, right? And I think that's what Caroline Leavitt was freaking out over is, I don't know how you would incorporate the cost of inflation into that, because that's much more difficult to calculate per individual product than a tariff would be. But I don't necessarily hate the idea, as long as it's not used as sort of a political lever. So we'll get to that in our daily subscriber poll, because I'm very curious what you guys think about that. All right, coming up next, I do want to talk about rent control and where it sits. First, I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge. I cannot say enough good things about First Mark. I was saying, I just got an email from them the other day about, you know, my business insurance renewal and sort of just checking in and how is everything going? Has anything changed? And then Mike and I just got it for our umbrella coverage. Hey, you have your renewal coming up. How is everything going? Do you want us to change anything? And I love that. And it takes so much stress out of the process. And you can save a bunch of money. And it just really is such a no-brainer. So do this. Schedule some time with First Mark to take the First Mark Challenge. You don't lose anything by doing it. It takes a little bit of time, but it's totally free. And at the end, you either are going to walk away with better insurance or insurance at a better price, so saving some money, or you'll walk away, as others have done, just understanding better the coverage that you do have, you know, knowing that it's the coverage that's you need and you're not paying for stuff you don't need. And so I think there's just a lot of benefits of doing it to better understand the insurance process and then ultimately perhaps save some money. We hear from so many Undivided viewers and listeners who are saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year, which who among us could not use an additional few thousand dollars a year to spend on other things besides insurance premiums. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay. So Representative Andrew Barkus, we've had him on the show a few times during the legislative session and typically to talk about rent control and housing issues because he has an interesting perspective. He's a landlord, and so he's vehemently opposed to things like rent control, and he's been fighting hard all session to try to get that bill stopped. Of course, Democrats did push through a version of rent control that basically says rent increases are capped at 7% a year plus inflation up to 10%. And what's going to happen? We all know what's going to happen. Landlords are just going to increase rent 10% every single year. We're waiting to see if Governor Bob Ferguson is going to sign it. But I'll say we had to have Andrew on because his last speech he gave on rent control on the floor was, I was so sad watching it because you could just tell that he just had done everything he could. There was nothing else he could say to stop it from happening. And he was utterly defeated.
Madam Speaker, I know this is going to come as a shock to you. But I don't have a lot more to say on this policy that we're going to vote on right now. It's interesting to me, Madam Speaker, that in the last several years, you and I have worked on a lot of housing issues. I referenced that before. We started kind of down the path when you were a chair of a different committee on landlord-tenant issues. I remember some of our very first conversations and debates trying to do what was the right thing. But it's interesting to me that this year's top priority, the number one bill of the session, the very first day of session in committee, was a bill that's going to do more harm for supply and more harm for tenants than good. The data is right in front of us. The other body worked on a product that we negotiated here in good faith and sent to them. And they boldly tried to fix some things that just maybe would have made this a little bit better. But after that, we couldn't wait to get it back here
and
strip all that away. I'm concerned about some potential constitutional defects in the very process that brings the bill to us today. The only real predictability that tenants in Washington State are going to have is the assurance that their rent is going to go up 10% a year, year over year. Madam Speaker, I've been in the industry doing this for 30 years. I think I have a pretty strong point of reference when it comes to working with housing providers and tenants. Madam Speaker, I'm concerned about the other 85% that have rent increases of less than 5%. So, congratulations. You did it. You passed your priority bill of the session. We're about to.
That's enough. I mean, don't you just feel sad? It's like, congratulations. I hope you're happy. Anyway, we asked Representative Andrew Barkus to come on, talk to us about, you know, one of the interesting things that we discuss in this interview is what happened behind the scenes and how absolutely brutal Democratic leadership was in trying to get its members to fall in line, and he characterized it as bullying. Here's our conversation with State Representative Andrew Barkus. Nicole? Wait,
something's going wrong in my export. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. Okay, we'll get back to it then if you want to work on that, and we'll get to our interview with State Representative Andrew Barkus coming up in a moment. We'll move on to our segment, Unbelievable. But first, our friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital is having another one of his free live webinars coming up on Thursday, May 22nd. And this one, speaking of tariffs, is specifically related to tariffs. So they're going to go over how the market is reacting to recent tariffs, how those tariffs could impact your retirement portfolio. They'll do a long-term outlook for 2025 and a full reveal of how Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, give your retirement as much upside as possible. So sign up for Zach's free webinar, Tariff Edition, Thursday, May 22nd. Register now at knowyourriskradio.com. So if you've been feeling uncertainty around your retirement portfolio and what's happening with the markets and what's happening with tariffs, this is just a good opportunity to sort of get your questions answered and ease any sort of fears or concerns that you might have. So get a second opinion on your retirement portfolio, totally free. Schedule your free risk review now, knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. And while you're there, sign up for that Tariff Edition live webinar. Okay. Are you prepared for some cringe today? Nothing has ever given me more secondhand embarrassment than the clip that we're about to play. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, so I gotta start this with a little bit of a personal preface. You guys know the story of former Seattle police chief Adrian Diaz, and he was accused of having an affair with his chief of staff, a former Fox 13 reporter who I used to work with named Jamie Tompkins. And I told you guys early on, I really questioned the validity of those rumors, but I also understand that this is someone I'd been friends with for years. I still am friends with. And so I just didn't feel like I was able to cover it in a way where my personal bias and feelings about the situation were left out of it. And so I sort of, you know, didn't cover it much. But I do want to cover this update because it led to the most cringeworthy moment of Seattle Mayor Bruce Harrell's entire political career. So there's a story out from Fox 13 where now Jamie Tompkins, the former chief of staff, he is filing a claim. So she's demanding, there's a demand letter, and then it goes into a lawsuit process. She's basically maintaining that these allegations were never true, that she never had an affair with the former chief of police, and that she was, according to this article, violated, degraded, and dehumanized by the Seattle Police Department, by Seattle's mayor, with everyone ignoring what she had to say about the situation and not actually listening and reviewing the evidence she had that she thought disproved everything. So she now has this claim process going on. So Mayor Bruce Harrell has a press conference yesterday. And the so awkward. So the press conference was about the increased police recruitment. And they're like, oh, everything's going great now. We're recruiting more officers because, of course, Seattle Police Department is like 700 officers down. And so they want to celebrate small victories, which I think is fine. I mean, if they're recruiting more officers, that's great. But just to paint this scene for you. So you've got Mayor Harrell at the lectern, and behind him are police recruits. So who are going to be, you know, the newest members of the Seattle Police Department. And then next to him is the new Seattle Police Chief. And they're there to celebrate, like, new recruitment. Well, two reporters are there to ask him about this story and these accusations from Jamie Tompkins, the former SPD chief of staff. One of them is our friend Jonathan Cho, and the other one is Fox 13's Hannah Kim. So first, Jonathan Cho asks him about this.
Mayor, I've obtained a demand letter from the attorney of former SPD chief of staff Jamie Tompkins. She claims that SPD subjected her to a sexually hostile work environment, that she was falsely accused by SPD employees of saying that she had an affair with former Chief Adrian Diaz. What are your thoughts on these allegations, and how do you and the city plan to respond?
So, thanks for the question, Jonathan. So I can't comment on either litigation or threatened litigation. I'll have to defer to the city attorney's office. But as you've heard before, we take all allegations seriously, very seriously. And what I've always said, from day one. We are a learning organization as a city. All of the departments under my administration are learning organizations. So we will take that into consideration should it come to us for making decisions, but I'll defer to the city attorney's office for any pending or threatened litigation.
Okay, so he sort of like brushes that off, right? And then he says, like, we're a learning organization. So is he acknowledging some fault in this situation? I don't know. So Cho asked this, and I think it's one thing for Jonathan Cho to ask it, right? Because then people are just going to dismiss it as, oh, you know, Jonathan Cho is carrying water for this former chief of staff of the police department. But then Hannah Kim is also there, and Hannah's a great reporter that I used to work with. Very fair, very tough. She follows up and asks Mayor Harrell about it, which probably caught him off guard, because again, it's one thing for Cho to ask about it, but now Hannah Kim is asking about it at this press conference where they're supposed to be celebrating new police recruitment. And this is what led to the most cringeworthy moment, you know, maybe of any politician ever in Seattle history. Go ahead.
When you say lessons learned and have to go back and learn from this, is there admission that this was handled improperly, her case?
So you should not make assumptions. I have both a city attorney's office to handle all litigation, threatened, pending, and actual litigation. I have a general counsel that handles all litigation, threatened, pending, or actual litigation. And we are running a city and moving forward today. So it's very, it's a poor assumption to know I know every complaint made by every employee. That's just not a good assumption. So again, on this day, we're moving forward. You guys with me, right? We are moving forward in this city. Taking our city back into a situation where we are protecting people. That's why we're here today.
Oh my God. Wrap your mind around that, okay? You got police recruits. That's like a hostile work environment. He's being asked about sexual assault allegations being mishandled. And in his moment of just being flustered, he turns around and says, "You're with me, right?" And they're like, and you've got the head of the Criminal Justice Training Commission, who's the woman on his right, and the police chief, and none of them are saying yes. Like, don't put this on us, dude. And you're just putting these police recruits on the spot. Dare I watch it again? Okay.
On this day, we're moving forward. You guys with me, right? We are moving forward in this city.
Oh my God.
Taking our city back into a situation where we are protecting people. That's why we're here today.
I've never been more confident those allegations are false. Because why would you react like that? That was so cringeworthy. And to put it on police recruits about sexual harassment is wild. I don't even know what to say to that. I got so many texts about this after Jonathan Cho put out that video yesterday being like, oh my God, have you seen this? Have you seen this? Have you seen this? And I'm like, oh yes, I have. Absolutely unbelievable. So I don't know what's going to come of this legal dispute. You know, one of the aspects, the underlying aspects that Jamie Tompkins has brought forth as part of this claim is the state of Washington. So when she was let go from the Seattle Police Department, the state of Washington actually approved her unemployment benefits because they agreed that she had basically been subjected to a hostile work environment. And so then whether you quit on your own or whether you're terminated, those are both reasons to deny you unemployment benefits. Instead of denying them to her, they gave them to her. And so they believed her story. And so now she's using that to basically go after the city of Seattle. And that's how Mayor Harrell responds to it. One of the most awkward things I've ever seen. All right, Nicole, do we have that interview yet? Working on it still?
I'm almost
working there. On it. Okay, we'll go international. First, if you're looking to sell your home at some point this year, reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com. He said May, which is just a couple days from now, holy smokes, is going to be a great month of the year to list your home. And really, it is still a seller's market. There's a ton of pent-up buyer demand. So if they see a house that hits the market, it's priced correctly, it's properly prepared for sale, which is a big, big point right now, which I'll get to in a moment, those are the homes that are just being snapped up really quickly. And when I say properly prepared for sale, there used to be a time not too long ago where you could list your home in any condition and you just get a butt ton of money for it. Can I say butt ton? Yes, a butt ton of money for it. And that's not the case necessarily now. You do have to put some work into it. And Wes loves taking on projects. He's the son of a builder. They have something called the Listing Boost Concierge Service, where he can come in, talk about what kind of cosmetic upgrades he thinks your home might need to make sure that it sells for the best possible price. So he'll walk you through all of that. Sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It simply is just a better way to sell your home. We'll get to our daily subscriber show poll. Do we have that?
Yes.
Oh, great. Okay. So I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals, and X about this issue with the tariffs, whether you think that companies should list costs associated to tariffs for consumers to see, yes or no. Nicole, are you a yay or nay on that?
You know, I'm fine with it. I actually think that it's fair, and you might be able to decipher when something's American made, and because sometimes you can't figure that out anyway. I mean, I know that when I'm buying something that's extra cheap and, you know, silly, that it's probably from China, but
I feel like you kind of know, right?
But, you know, now you'll have something telling you,
reminding you. Never before, to my knowledge, in the history of undivided subscriber polls, have we had this outcome. 50-50. Exactly.
Wow.
Exactly 50-50. So again, the question was, Amazon denies reports it considered displaying the cost of tariffs on imported items. Do you believe businesses should include tariff costs as a line item for consumers to see? Exactly 50-50. Sydney says, I don't think it should be forced, but I would really want people to know how much all the taxes that are paid along the way add to the cost of everything. Amelia, I do not think tariff costs are necessarily that evident, and people will manipulate them to hide the reality of the actual costs. Every time the gas tax goes up, that's a cost that is passed through the process to the consumer, but we don't see that in the end receipt. Yes, you do. Actually, they do list gas taxes. If we are going to ask for tariff costs to be shown, then you need to show all the different taxes and costs. Otherwise, it's just a blame game. Oh, I think what you're saying is in the end receipt, like if gas prices go up and it leads to increased costs, like on the back end at the grocery store, you don't necessarily see that because that's hard. There are some costs that are just way too hard to calculate in there. B. Larson says, there's too many things that factor into the cost of goods. Should we list everything? Production costs, storage, transportation, employee pay, etc. That's too much. Yeah, and I agree with that in the sense that some things, how would you actually, if you had to, for instance, increase pay, how would you actually calculate how much of that had to be passed on to consumers and how much for each good? I think that would be asking too much of businesses, but some things are more easier. Like I do think tariffs would be an easier cost to actually calculate based on how much it costs to bring into the country. All right, Kelly, I'm all for transparency. Also, this is an opportunity for made in the USA companies to shine, to Nicole's point, because then they wouldn't have that cost listed next to them because it didn't cost anything to import. Karen, it should not be a requirement having to pay people to delineate the cost would add to the cost of the items. Also a good point. What would be the cost associated with actually breaking all of that down? Ron, that's okay, since 90% of the stuff you buy from Amazon is made in China. Yeah, and sometimes, even if I mean, you can look and see where things are made, but like the misspellings or bad grammar on the descriptions, I'm like, yeah, that was made in China.
Or the company,
still gonna buy it.
From a company that's just a bunch of letters.
Yeah, it's like, okay, cool.
There's no real name.
You know, look, we know. I love America Made, but I'm buying stuff from China. That's probably not going to stop. Jennifer, if tariff costs were an added item, I think it would help me recognize where things are coming from and look for American-made options. Unfortunately, that is sometimes harder to tell than it should be. Yeah. Hey, yeah, I mean, look, I want to be a good American. I do. I think I am. But if I've got two of the same things that serve the same purpose, one of them's American and one of them's Chinese, and the Chinese one is way less. Am I telling you here honestly that I wouldn't buy the Chinese one?
Well,
does it make me a bad person?
Is that not the point of the tariffs, to encourage?
A little bit, yes, and more fair trade, right? But part of it, if you want, but some things American companies don't make.
Right, but so, I just mean we're going to start buying here and China won't have that market and maybe they'll come down on the tariffs and like
that's it'll work with some things. Other things, they kind of have the market cornered on it.
Sure.
And so it's not going to do much good, like your Temu purchases. Don't shame me. Shame Nicole for shopping on Temu so much.
I need not to. So.
I have never bought anything from Temu. I've bought plenty of Chinese things. Never from Temu, damn it. All right, do you have an interview for us or
I
what?
I got it.
Fired. Okay, so going back to the topic of rent control, of course, a lot of efforts were made to try to stop rent control from becoming law. We still don't know yet what Governor Bob Ferguson will do, but Representative Andrew Bark has joined us to talk a little bit about what was happening behind the scenes and also how much bullying went on to try to convince Democrats, bullying from their own party, to vote for it. Representative Barkas, welcome back to Undivided.
Good morning, Brandy. Always a pleasure and honor to be on your show and to talk to you. And I'll just start by thanking you for everything you've done to share our message and get the word out on a daily basis. Your voice has been just so, so important to everything that we have been doing.
See, why can't everyone compliment me like that at the start of an interview? You know, well, why can't everyone ingratiate themselves to me?
It's true. I tell you, I mean, you can't imagine, but how many people say, hey, I heard on Brandy this. She's talking about this. Are you guys doing this? I'm like, yeah, that's what we're doing. So, you know, we just haven't had a platform like yours, I think, ever. I mean, we've had some great people over the course of time, but having a dedicated platform of you putting the information out for people has been critically important. And I think it helped with the participation of people this year in the session by participating in the process. So
well, that makes me happy. That makes me happy. I know we had a lot of people sign up and you know, gave them some easy ways to weigh in. But this isn't about me, although
yeah,
I
no,
love
it's
it.
Not about
I
you.
Love it. Great. Now I know who to have on when I need a little pick me up. All right. But on a more depressing note, we played your floor speech on rent control. You seemed utterly over it and exhausted.
Yeah. Well, the exhaustion is definitely real. I feel it today. It'll take a while to recover physically, mentally, spiritually, the whole thing. Session, this especially this year was really bad. I think it was really telling that, and I said this, you know, in a time where we're talking about housing problems, crisis, whatever you want to talk about, the fact that we started this year as with the number one priority in housing to be rent control, you know, day one. Hearing all the process, right? And when we should be talking about supply. And so the work that was done as this bill moved through the process with the House, negotiations we did, stripping away stuff, the great work the Senate did. I mean, some bold members of the Senate, Senator Cleland, you know, and others who really stuck it out there to hang the things that made it palatable. And then the fight at the end in the conference, you know, we had that one last chance, we had the votes, and they just peeled off the votes one by one, probably in the most brutal way I've ever seen. I mean, talking to my colleagues about what they went through to vote no was amazing. And yeah, at the end, after all that work, and you think you're there and you think you might stop it, and there it is, you know, and it's the final day, the final vote. I wouldn't say that we were completely defeated, because I think we did do some good things, but the overall defeat, knowing how detrimental this policy is going to be for Washington State, it makes absolutely no sense that we pass this. And history will show we're going to come back. It's going to be a mess like every other state that's done this. And they're going to go, oh my gosh, I can't believe rents have gone up. Well, of course they have. They're going to go up to that percent year after year after year.
Is that what you'll do? Because you are a landlord, correct? And so do you anticipate passing 7% plus inflationary costs along to your renters?
You know, we're going to have, I'm back here in my office first time, and everybody was like, oh, who are you? When I walked in today. I haven't been here in a long time. We have to really evaluate, and we're working to preserve housing providers. They're leaving. We're trying to keep them here. So we have to help navigate them through. But they're also seeing that and going, well, geez, if I can't raise my rent for this amount of time and I can't do this and all these other taxes went up, yeah, what's the maximum again? It's this. Raise it to that. We have this very in-depth process where we evaluate, we do market research, and we talk to the owner. We would call you up and say, hey, this is what it is. This is what we recommend. Some owners would say no. Some would say yes. it's none of what you've heard by the talking heads on the opposite side of this issue. It doesn't happen that way, right? And so it will make the process very easy, Brandy, because it probably will go up to whatever that max is. That's the problem when you do price fixing, when you do this type of market influencing. You're not allowing the market to work.
Yeah, you're hedging your bets and basically, well, if I've got some massive cost increase next year, I might not have it this year, but I've got to hedge my bets and do that. I want to read between the lines of something you just said. We know that things got really nasty and brutal on the Senate side when Democratic State Senator Annette Cleveland introduced the amendment to sort of lift it to 10%, soften it a little bit. I can't even imagine how she was treated behind the scenes by her own caucus. But you had mentioned, you know, they were picking off members one by one. I mean, would you... So you're basically saying the Democratic caucus was what, bullying, brutalizing people into changing their vote?
I think bullying is an accurate term. Hmm. I mean, it's the way the majority works. It's very different than what it used to be there. And when I have a lot of friends, you know, I work bipartisan. I have friends on both sides of the aisle. And, you know, when they're coming to my office telling me that they can't take this vote anymore and they can barely even say why, you know that they were pulled back into some office and told this is how you're going to vote or else. Annette Cleveland lost her, I think her chair, her caucus position. They forced her to resign. I mean, they'll strip your committees from you. I mean, it's unbelievable that's how they are in order to get what they want. You know, and I don't remember that. I remember in my almost 10 years, I mean, you had a sense of independence. Yes, you could get the pressure put on you, but in the end of the day, you're an independent actor. You're a representative for your constituents, your district, first and foremost. And, you know, I've taken some hard votes. I've been counseled, but I've never had a boot put on me to say, you will vote this way. Our caucus doesn't work that way. You could see it because when you are vote counting and you know you have X amount and then all of a sudden you're talking to the stakeholders and that goes from 14 to 12 to 9 to 8 to 7 and you're done. You just have no more votes.
Yeah, I mean, we saw it play out on the floor of the Senate when they were voting on that amendment to increase it to 10%. I mean, Senator Jamie Peterson was literally hovering over members, are you going to vote the way we want you to vote? And I had a lot of people talk to me about how intimidating it looked just watching it. So it's
well,
wild.
The same thing on the floor. I mean, Speaker Jenkins was out on the floor. Representative Leavitt, 28, she's been a solid no the mm-hmm. whole time. The board was held open. It came down to one or two votes in the end. The speaker was on her desk. On her desk, the board was held open. Rep Shavers went... yes, and he held it, and then it was a trade, and then she went no, and then he was no, and then he went yes. So it was a trade, but you could see the dynamics, and her head was down on her desk, and I just look at that, I'm like, wow. You think about the other work that these representatives have done on both sides, the good policy, the good things that we do, and then to be treated like that over something like this, when you're not allowed to voice your opposition to something where you truly feel and know that it's not the right policy.
It's insane. Intense and insane. No allowance for independent thought or anything like that. Do you believe that Governor Ferguson will veto this or sign it?
This is a tough one because I think that, I worked with his office through this. I can tell you that the staff that I worked with, they did not like this policy. They knew of its challenges. We're advocating for the changes that came through. I think the fact that everything was stripped back out could play in. It's a pretty tight bill, and you know that we don't have a line item veto in the state of Washington. You have to veto the whole thing or sections, right? There could be some stuff done, which throws it back to the drawing board. It's hard to tell. I mean. Yeah. He's gonna be faced with a lot of decisions on things he has to do, especially with the operating budget and the taxes and everything else that he's been very vocal about not supporting what the final outcome of that of the operating budget was.
Yeah, and I'm hesitant to give him credit now because, I mean, if he's celebrating that, oh, we dropped it from $12 billion to $9.5 billion in new taxes, and it's like, no, that's not a win. That's not fiscal conservatism in any sense.
It's just they instead of having one major tax, they found 15 smaller ones that spread it out. And, you know, in listening to Senator Peterson, you know, Jane Peterson's talk and justifying this, you know, again, it's for the kids, it's for school, it's for the baloney. They made more cuts in programs that we argued against all over the place that are critical programs, and they're doing budget savings of $10 million, and then increasing it over on the backside of it. So the operating budget is a mess, and it does increase spending by like 7%. It's the highest budget, and again, to put it in perspective, you know, back in 2017, first budget was like $32 billion. This one's almost $80 billion in a very short period of time. So
crazy. Let's end with this. There was, I think, some misinformation going around that you voted for all the new taxes, which isn't true. You did, however, work on the transportation budget. So it's my understanding. So people understand this process. You got a bunch of different bills and some of them tax bills that make up the budget, right? That support the sort of budget number. So you did not vote for the gas tax, but you did vote for the overall transportation budget. So isn't that the same thing or no?
No.
Okay.
No, because I mean, the biggest difference is, and I was explaining this. So I'm the ranking member on transportation. I start day one, I'm in part of the budget cabinet. I work side by side with my Democrat counterpart, Chair Fai. We go through the whole budget, the entire process, projects, state patrol, everything. Hundreds and hundreds of hours, right? So I'm involved in the decision-making process of how we make cuts, how we keep projects going, how we prioritize, all that stuff. We knew going into this, we didn't have the revenue to accomplish what we need to accomplish to keep things moving. Very, very challenging because there are projects all over, like in Lewis County and other areas, where major development is contingent on this. Huge economic development, jobs, I mean, for these communities, right? So I worked to find every bit of existing revenue in the budget as it exists. I worked to find ways to reprioritize. At the end of the day, the Democrats put forth new revenue, the gas tax. I argued against it and I voted against it. But my job, Brandy, is to write that budget and to appropriate the revenues that have been provided for. And I felt I did it in the best possible way for Washingtonians, the best, most fiscal conservative way to keep things moving. I'm proud of that work. And the difference between the operating budget, which I've never voted yes on the operating budget, is because the Republicans are not in the room at all during the process of writing the operating budget. Yeah. That is a partisan majority run show. Transportation has never been that way. We work together. So there's a responsibility and everything else along that. It was, you know, and many of my colleagues voted yes, some voted no. I think I articulated that well, but there is confusion. And I just wanted to state on the record, I didn't vote for a single tax this year, bar none, period.
Yeah. And I just want to end with this, because Bob Ferguson has sort of hinted at or been wishy-washy that on his support of the increased gas tax. So we'd be looking at a 6 cent per gallon increase starting July 1st.
Yeah.
You know, and I hate to say this because I don't want it either. But if any new tax could be justified, I guess it would be the gas tax, only in the sense that there are so few revenue sources available for transportation projects. You can't pull money from just anywhere, right? So one, do you think he'll veto that? And two, if he does, doesn't that throw the entire transportation budget out the window?
He could veto it very well because it is in addition to all the other taxes, right?
Yeah.
It would definitely throw us in a bind. I think we would be okay to get through between now and when we come back in January. We do what's called a supplemental budget in the odd years or even years. So we would have to readjust and look for alternate. There's only two ways you do this. You stop projects, you cut projects, you cut funding to State Patrol, you cut funding here and there to essential services, or you increase revenue. And so, you know, we did pause a lot of projects. We reprioritized. We've still got the culvert thing hanging over us, and we've got all these other things we've got to deal with. Ferries, we're going to get the bid. We'll have to talk about this when this comes out. Mm-hmm. We're going to get the bid in May for ferries. I'm scared to death what that number's going to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's going to be crazy. So We'll see. We are did well in the way we put this together to get through this period. It's the out years that are going to be very challenging.
Yeah. Well, and here's the solution. You take money from the stupid Climate Commitment Act and you allow that to go toward transportation projects. And
amen.
Amen.
I mean, I reference that again. I was able to move several hundred million dollars around in there that people don't know how we did, but I did that. But I also have my bill that said, give us, you know, reframe that whole thing. I'm not done with that argument. I'm going to come back again on that again next year.
Yeah. All right. Representative Andrew Barkas, get some rest, sir. We appreciate you coming on and explaining to us what's going on. And I just hope beyond hope that Bob Ferguson vetoes rent control, if not for anything else other than maybe a selfish political purpose of his campaign promise to build more housing. So, all right,
well,
sir.
Let's see what he does, and we'll reconvene and talk about it.
Okay, great. All right, appreciate it.
All right, take care, Brady.
Thank you to Representative Andrew Barkas for coming on, talking to us about rent control, what he's likely to do as a landlord, and I think this is what we're going to see. I don't know how long it will take, if Bob Ferguson signs this, for us to truly understand the impact of rent control. I mean, I think you'll have developers who immediately decide to turn their focus elsewhere, and then people are going to realize pretty quick that they're seeing exactly a 10% increase in their rent every single year when they otherwise maybe weren't seeing those types of increases so consistently. So a reminder that our weekly housing segment during the session has been brought to you by the Rental Housing Association of Washington. If you're a landlord, now is a really good time to make sure that you have the power of RHA in your corner. They can help you navigate these strange, uncertain times and are definitely down in Olympia trying to advocate, as I'm sure they are right now with the governor, trying to advocate on your behalf and get him to veto that bill. RHAWA.org, RHAWA.org. All right, let's jump into National Canada Why? And honestly, I think it's conservatives' fault. They like snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. So Mark Carney, who's a liberal, has been elected as Canada's next prime minister. He already had replaced Justin Trudeau, but now that is more official, if you will. This from NPR. In his victory speech, Mark Carney warns Canadians that Trump is trying to break us. Okay, whatever. So this is just more of the same. And it's fascinating to watch how quickly this happened, because had you asked even 3-4 months ago, it seemed like Pierre Poilievre was an absolute shoo-in for the job on the conservative side of things. I mean, he had all these crazy viral moments, super smart guy, talking about what was happening under Justin Trudeau in Canada. And it's just a shame you got someone like him and they choose Mark Carney. And it's like, for the love of God. But the reason I say it's conservatives' fault, in part also Donald Trump, I've got to be honest, is, you know, with the sort of attacks on Canada and the tariffs and all of that, Canadians took it very personally. There's a lot of them that took it very personally. And it, as much as Pierre Poilievre was critical of Donald Trump over all of that, they sort of did a successful job, the Liberals did, of tying him to Donald Trump and to the politics of Donald Trump. And so it's shocking how fast things changed in Canada. So things aren't going to get better there anytime soon. But I do believe Donald Trump maybe is in part to blame, and also Pierre Poilievre is in part to blame as well. So that is a super disappointment. All right. On the tariff front, as critical as people are about tariffs, and again, you know, the recognition that tariffs are a tax, would you be as critical of tariffs if Donald Trump used the money that was coming in to decrease your federal tax burden? I think if people had a choice, like, hey, tariffs, we can have tariffs and your federal taxes will be lower, or we don't have federal tariffs and your federal taxes will stay where they are, I think a lot of people would be like, no, lower my taxes, please. Donald Trump on Truth Social, when tariffs cut in, many people's income taxes will be substantially reduced. I think he meant come in. I don't know. Maybe even completely eliminated. Focus will be on people making less than $200,000 a year. Also, massive numbers of jobs are already being created with new plants and factories currently being built or planned. It will be a bonanza for America. The External Revenue Service is happening. I like that. External Revenue Service. So, I mean, if you're going to tell me that if you're under $200,000 a year, because we don't pay a state income tax. So if then we had a lower federal income tax, or as he said, completely eliminated, which I don't think that'll happen, but I might be a little less critical of tariffs. I mean, you have to look at it holistically, right? What are the other consequences balanced with that? And where does it balance out? For instance, if you see your federal income taxes go down, does it compensate for how much the cost of goods goes up with tariffs? And so I think that will vary based on the individual. But anyway, my taxes could be reduced. Having just paid a big fat check to the IRS, I would certainly love to see that happen. Running your own business sucks. Taxes, you know, because you just don't think of it in the same way when it's coming out of your paycheck every couple weeks, you're just used to it, you don't really notice, then you might even get some money back.
Right.
You might even get that old, tax refund, and what am I going to do with it? Mm-hmm. Nope. My days of tax refunds are over.
Same.
It's just depressing.
That check I had to write just as I was leaving on vacation.
Oh my gosh, like, just depressing. But yeah, I mean, so if he says that the tariffs are going to substantially, you know, reduce our national debt or, you know, cut down on federal income taxes, maybe people will think that they're worth it. But the goal can't be long-term tariffs like this. I mean, that can't be it. So, I mean, I don't know really anyway. I think it's just Donald Trump throwing something out there and saying, here's what we'd like to do. I would love for him to pursue it. I'm not sure that tariffs can be the lever to accomplish that long term, though. So curious what you guys think. All right, let's get to some comments. Sorry, the show was all switched around
all over
today.
The place. Sorry about that.
Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Happy birthday, Nicole. Did we miss this on the show yesterday?
Yeah, that was yesterday's super chat.
So we got a couple we missed on the show yesterday. Our apologies. And will you put the ones from today in?
Because
I don't see them in there yet.
There's just one. But yes.
I don't see that one in. Will you make sure it's in there? Mm-hmm. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Happy birthday, Nicole. You actually do look like you're in your early 30s. So whatever you're doing, hippie medicine, travel, softball, et cetera, it's working.
All of the above.
Because I was saying that on the subscriber Q&A we had on Sunday. Like, Nicole looks so, not that you're not young. You are young. But it is a little annoying, like complete lack of wrinkles. Not a wrinkle to be found.
I feel like they're coming. I keep having people offer Botox parties to me, and I'm like, well, maybe I should.
No, here's the other thing that pisses me off. You are out in the sun constantly, and one of the things I'm always very committed to, I mean, when I'm at when I'm at the beach, when I was down in Cabo, like, I'll put a towel over my whole body and wear a big hat, I'll do my SPF 50 to 100 depending on where I am, and I have wrinkles.
You don't have wrinkles. You have to make wrinkles.
No, I definitely do have wrinkles. I have more wrinkles than you. Not only am I younger by quite a bit. No, I'm just kidding. Not by quite a bit. Well, not
true.
Only am I younger,
true.
But I also hide from the sun like the plague.
Yeah.
And you still have fewer wrinkles.
I do. I'm very good about sunscreen. I wear sunscreen every day on my face. So.
Not cool, man.
You know.
Papa Woody, $2 super chat. Haven't gotten anything back from the IRS in years. Lame. Also said, our local grocery store and liquor store in Elma does show the difference in its costs and taxes. By the way, somehow my Patreon account was restored. Oh, that's good. I'm glad your Patreon account was restored. I didn't know it was unrestored. I didn't know something was wrong with it, but now I know. On taxes, country guy, any of these politicians can voluntarily make a donation to the state if they'd like. Any takers? Probably not. Probably not. On tariffs, Hello Watermelon says, I want the option to pay out the wazoo for quality. There's no quality products out there anymore, no matter how much wazoo you have. If you have that much wazoo, I hope you're a paid subscriber, because we'll take some of your wazoo for sure. But that's so true, because I've been looking for a new couch. Mm-hmm. Mike has these old, he got them from Costco like years ago, and they're just behemoth leather couches, and I've been wanting to get rid of them so bad. If anybody's in the market for some highly used leather sofa set,
check Facebook Marketplace.
Yes, check Facebook Marketplace. Haven't listed them yet, but I'm out there shopping for furniture. Everything is junk. And the stuff that isn't junk is kind of out the wazoo. Like, there's this great furniture store in Issaquah that has really quality, cool furniture. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry, I'm not going to pay $15,000 to $20,000 for a couch. I'm not parking a car in my living room. You should be able to get a quality leather sofa.
Okay.
For under $8,000.
I'm sure that, so I just bought a couch from the old Cannery Warehouse in Sumner.
Oh,
which
good.
I love.
Buy your couches at buy the your old couch Cannery at the Warehouse. Old Cannery. We will send you our bill for that free advertisement.
Anyway, but I do love shopping local like that, mm-hmm. because it is a couch that you can get some other places, but I like to shop local like that. And it's quality, but I will say, I mean, they're all getting them from similar places, and they did tell me they're, you know, this one's gonna last like 10 years, this one'll last like 5 years. I mean, it is a hard thing to get a long lasting couch. Like, I remember the one I grew up with, remember everybody had the same couch, I feel like, but with those big, it was like brown and brick red, and then had big flower things or whatever. I mean, that couch was probably 40 years old,
and it's solid,
and it was solid
like
while I was growing
punch
up
it. That's gonna last. I did get...
They don't make them like that anymore.
I did get a really cool chair at Selden's in Tacoma. Selden's in Tacoma, where you too can get a cool chair.
We get nothing from them.
And it was, you know, I got, yeah, I didn't get it. That's not actually a paid ad. But they have some cool stuff there and unique stuff. But yeah, it is true that it's really hard to find. Like, why is it so hard to find a solid, actual, real wood table? This ain't real wood. No, this ain't, and it's from Amazon. It was like $120. So, but you know, if you look for one, it's really hard to find. I found one for our breakfast nook when we were remodeling our house, but you do have to pay more, but it's incredibly difficult to find like good American made furniture.
Right.
So I agree with you. Anyway, rant about that. Mm-hmm. Pickle Man. Amazon would not list the tariff prices as they would be pressured to reduce the price when the tariff is eliminated. And it seems pretty common for businesses to take their sweet time to reduce the price when costs go down. Yeah,
that's true.
Greg, some alcohol retailers list the Washington State liquor tax on the price tag.
Actually, almost all of them do. As you should, right? Some place in the store.
And somebody was saying that they don't list the gas tax, but do they not? I think it's listed at the pump, right? How much is it is in taxes? Am I crazy?
I think you might be crazy. I don't know. I don't know that I've ever noticed it.
I got a gas up today. I'm going to look. But I swear it has like a breakdown of where the state gas tax is at.
Huh.
Somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
Okay.
All right. Let me see. On the Seattle PD story, Carl G. Oh, God. I'll read it. I did put it in. Am I the only one thinking there's no universe in which Adrian Diaz and Jamie get together? Look, you know, that's one of the reasons I don't necessarily believe the story. Country Guy, King 5, We Stand for Truth, just showed that scene of Bruce Harrell at this press conference. But that part of it didn't make the cut. So shocking. King 5 was there covering the police recruiting part. Mayor Bruce Harrell has hands down the most awkward, weird, cringeworthy moment he's ever had as mayor. And it didn't make it into the King 5 story. Shock of the century. Mm-hmm. Elemental Dino, my brother graduated from the police academy last year. The thought of something like this happening would be so upsetting. Like he's walking into a Jersey Shore department. That's what I was thinking is, imagine you're about to join SPD or any police department, and you got this press conference where the mayor's making a big deal out of it, and he turns around and does something like that to you, puts you on the spot to like agree with him and their handling of sexual harassment claims. Mm-hmm. That's so weird. And it would totally, you would wonder, am I going into a Jersey Shore, that's a good way to put it, a Jersey Shore police department? Is this the drama I can expect? And if you're signed up to go to the Seattle Police Department, you already should know that.
Probably.
That there is quite a bit of drama at SPD.
It really is. And I know this is a new chief, but I hope he gets a handle on it because it's not just this story. We've been hearing stories for years about the drama in the SPD. So
yeah. And bringing in chiefs from the outside has never fixed it. And it's also just offensive. Can we stop this practice of bringing in police chiefs from the outside? You have an agency where you have hundreds of people who have risen through the ranks, worked for the city of Seattle and its citizens for years and years and years, and you're basically telling them because they're insiders, they can never rise to the level of being the police chief.
Right.
How offensive is that?
Yeah, it's
ridiculous. Just crazy. And what incentive are you giving them to stay long term if they're someone who wants to stay there, commit to staying there, rise up through the ranks, be on the command staff, be the police chief, and they're not good enough because they've spent their whole career there. So you bring in some dude from Wisconsin who has a shady track record.
Shady.
And you bring him in, what, because of the color of his skin?
Uh-huh.
Just wild stuff. What am I doing next? The show has been really all over the place, but that's all right. Still fun. Thank you, Nicole. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. So, Como News, I'm going to give a little credit to Como News for this story. They covered these changes in the state's reparations program, and I'm glad that they did it. And they even referred to it as reparations, I think, once in the story. Also good. So they talked to the woman who is tasked by the state with implementing this program and actually handing out these zero interest home loans, soon to be home gifts of $120,000 to home buyers with the right skin pigmentation. So we just gift them their down payment. And this lady had a very, Nicole characterized it as a Kamala Harris type answer to the question about, you know, isn't this unfair?
These aren't handouts. They're really hand-ups.
Loretta Kale supervises 9 housing counselors who help people buy or save their homes. She also had a hand in creating the Covenant Home Ownership Program, which started giving zero-interest loans to first-time homebuyers last year.
What would you say to critics who say this is just a form of reverse discrimination?
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because what I don't think they're taking into consideration is the overall impact that housing has on so many other factors that affect their lives.
What does that even mean? Absolute nonsense answer. I'm so glad Como News actually asked the question, but doesn't surprise me that like a woke white woman is the one administering a reparations program in Washington State, and we need to take into consideration the impact that housing has on people's lives. Got it. Got it. All right, that has been our sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. As you've probably noticed, I'm pushing paid subscriptions very hard lately. We love our advertisers, but you only want to rely so much on advertising revenue. And so one of the ways to do that is to boost our number of paid subscribers. So if you've been watching the show for free during the week and you'd like to support the work that we're doing, get access to our exclusive show Sundays with subscribers, our monthly subscriber Q&As, you can do that for $5, $5 a month. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Com. Just click on the banner that says support the show. That's it. That's all I got today. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time. Same place.